AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. There is a tremendous amount of hand-wringing happening in the media today. Georgia's voters have either gone or are going to the polls to decide which party will have control of the Senate, at least for a couple of years. We'll discuss that, along with the rule changes in the House, CFAP 3 provisions, and a 50-cent rally in beans?
Live from No Turning Back Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Ethan Lane from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Then it's a timely update from Pro Farmers Jim Wiesmeyer. And right after the news, Annalisa Laca from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, man, it's that day. It is finally here. The day that we've been talking about since, like, November 6th, 7th, like, right mm-hmm. 2 months ago. Yeah. We are finally to the Georgia runoff elections for those Senate seats. Answers today? I wouldn't guarantee it, mm-hmm. but we'll see what Wiesmeyer thinks about that. The hand-wringing that is happening in the Senate, or in the media over this, I mean, it is absolutely to the point that you've got to turn it off. I'm part of the media, and I'm saying that. Yeah. And it drives me crazy to have to say it. But it depends on what station you're watching, what network you're watching. I mean, my gosh, it's either the fate of the free world lies in the balance, or the path to democracy is about to be to be blocked forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, what kills me is that the media is absolutely ignoring some of the things that we're going to be talking about on today's show.
Oh, great.
And yeah.
Because we did pledge in 2021 we would be part of the solution, right?
Right.
Rather than part of the problem.
That is
so this
correct.
Puts that in action, I guess, yeah.
Well, part of what I want to talk about is, and you guys know how I feel about Speaker Pelosi. She is mm-hmm. a fantastic lawmaker in the swamp, but she's a big part of the reason that the swamp is still full. Mm-hmm. And she's got the gavel again.
Yeah.
To me personally, the way I'm looking at what's going on in DC, the fact that she's got the gavel as the House Speaker again is more important than the elections happening in Georgia today. It's that disappointing to me. There.
Wow.
I just said it.
Okay.
I just said it. We'll see what Wiesmeyer thinks about that coming up here in a little bit. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's go ahead and jump right in. What you got?
Well, let me clarify what we were just talking about in case you hadn't heard. Today's runoff election in Georgia will decide which party has the majority in the U.S. Senate. Almost 40% of all registered voters in Georgia have cast ballots already, either by mail or in person. If the outcome of the two races are as close as some predict, the winners may not be known tonight. As of now, the GOP holds a slim 50-48 majority in the Senate. But if Democrats win both of the runoff races, Vice President Kamala Harris would be the tie-breaking vote, giving the party basically control of the White House and Congress. Chip?
Yeah, and it's the trifecta that I think a Biden administration might fear the most is how it might turn out.
Well, USDA will purchase an additional $1.5 billion in food nationwide for distribution via the Farmers to Families Food Box Program. The fifth round of food box purchases comes via funding provided through the COVID aid plan approved December 21. Chip seafood products will now be eligible along with other hard, semi-firm or semi-soft cheeses. As of January 4, USDA said that 132.5 million food boxes had been invoiced. So you can get a little shrimps there in your food box if you like, maybe.
Yeah. Huh? And most importantly, the dairy products that are in there, cheese in particular, That's helping this milk market out again. February futures back up at 1787, March up at 18 bucks. I mean, it brought some support back into the class three milk futures.
Boy, cheese is good too. Yeah. USDA is working to soothe farmer complaints about WIP plus payments. The agency and farm state lawmakers will hold a roundtable on the subject today. Chip, that's a method they have used in the past to answer concerns on a particular topic. Based on calls and emails from farmers, USDA's implementation of the program has been very haphazard, as some states and counties are way behind other locations. The New York Stock Exchange has scrapped plans to delist China's three largest telecoms firms. It had originally sought to comply with an executive order signed by President Trump barring American companies from investing in companies with Chinese military ties. Some traders see the prospect of a less overtly competitive approach toward China by the Biden administration as a reason, according to the Financial Times. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe trying to smooth things over with China just a little bit here, Chip?
Well, I think so. I think so. But at the same time, you got to believe that the progress that was made in the trade negotiations and the reworking of how business is supposed to be done in those trade negotiations, and the warning shots fired about the WHO and getting not the WHO, the WTO, getting the WTO involved in the future, you would think that that would still hold some merit with the Chinese officials.
Mm-hmm. Well, finally here quickly, Boris Johnson, Britain's prime minister, announced a strict new lockdown for all of England to reduce the spread of COVID-19. This as New York State reports its first detection of the new, more virulent strain. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Annalisa Laca. Speaking of, Annalisa is the editor of Farm Journalist Milk. Speaking of COVID here, Annalisa, what is going on with some of the requirements on milk and whether or not somebody in the operation has got COVID?
So we learned late last week of a farm in New York that's being asked to dump their milk because one of the farm owners, who's a nurse, tested positive for COVID in a routine testing at the hospital where she works. And she didn't have any symptoms, but the cooperative that they shipped to asked them to dump that milk. And so in speaking with that cooperative, one of the things that we're learning is that this is going to be happening on a case-by-case basis. And from what I understand, it has less to do, with the milk being contaminated with COVID, because obviously in the United States, we pasteurize our milk and therefore a virus can't live in the milk. And it's more about keeping an infrastructure that this time of year is fragile, meaning milk truck drivers safe. So it has more to do with keeping those milk truck drivers safe and keeping those milk trucks hauling milk, particularly in places like the Northeast, where our infrastructure on these smaller plants is really complicated and really fragile for all of the cooperatives, not just for this one. But so if you're hearing about farmers having to dump their milk because they're COVID positive, it's not a widespread thing that's happening, and it's not like a blanket rule. It's going to be on a case-by-case basis, and those farmers are being paid for that milk.
Farmers are being paid for the milk. That's good to hear. Had you heard of anything like this until now? I mean, we're 10 months in.
No. So up until this point, we've known a lot of dairy farmers that shipped milk while they were positive. Unfortunately, we've known a lot of dairy farmers that have died from COVID as well. But no, we haven't heard anything like this up to this point, Chip. And I think it has more to do with the fact that farmers are producing more milk and we're in a really tight supply at the moment.
Gotcha. All right, Annalisa, thank you so much. That is Annalisa Laca, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Okay, we'll stay on the COVID theme. CFAP 3 payments. What's it mean for cattlemen? Ethan Lane, next.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Wow, Davis. First, welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. We've got March beans, well, May beans, as much as 50.5 cents higher right now. Mm-hmm. 1369 and three quarters in the May contract, 1371 in the March contract. And that corn market is making a move, dude. Up 11.5 cents. We've got a high
there.
We've got a high in the May contract of 4.96 and a quarter. Okay, so heads up there, buddy. Heads up there, pal. We could we could be breaking out another song here this afternoon, which would thrill me.
I've been waiting on this for 3 years.
Love it. Love it. $12, $13 higher in meal, 170 points higher in oil. Wheat is screaming to the upside, 13, 17 cents higher there. Cattle, $1.60 higher in the February contract. Hogs are steady, slightly. Well, let's call hog trade mixed right now. Okay, let's bring in Ethan Lane. Ethan is the VP of Governmental Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Joins us right now. Ethan, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chip. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you. You know, Ethan, when you take a look at the latest numbers on CFAP 2, cattlemen did a really nice job of figuring out how to make sure that they're eligible for those payments. Almost $2.8 billion in payments out of CFAP 2. That's some significant help for the cattle industry.
Well, it is. And, you know, when you combine it with the $4 billion and change we saw in CFAP 1, and now this new tranche that we're looking at, you know, for not having played this game before, I think we've been relatively pleased with the results. I mean, it's not something we wanted to do. It's certainly not somewhere we want to be in the future. But, boy, it's been a lifeline in a year like the last year has been for a lot of producers around the country.
Ethan, how effective has it been? How much of the losses that were experienced in the cattle industry have been offset, I'm going to put that in quotes, offset by these CFAP payments?
Well, I think that the efficacy of this program is as diverse as the producers we have in the country, right? If you're a small producer and you got paid on those sales during the height of the pandemic before April 15th, so you got those $200-plus payments, and you know, you're in that range where maybe you didn't hit that payment limitation cap. This could have really been something that was a game changer in your operation. If you're a bigger feedlot, maybe those caps came into play earlier in the program and didn't give you quite as much help as you needed based on the volume of your losses. But as we've seen successive rounds, we've been pleased with the fact that we've seen more help go to some of the other segments. I mean, the cow-calf producers, if you aggregate those payments, are up over $100 a head on the pair for the year. And that starts to get in line with some of the damage estimates that we had prepared back in the spring. They were estimating $111 a head in 2020 for the cow-calf sector. So that starts to be a much more effective means of support at that point, we believe. And we've heard all different, you know, pieces of feedback. Some folks that have said, man, this really got me through the year. And others that said, great, you know, it's a helpful check. But, boy, my losses were significantly higher than that. So I think it kind of runs the gamut.
Yeah, absolutely. So CFAP 3, what do producers need to make sure that they're eligible? Is there a sign-up? Is it going to be implemented any differently?
Well, so this has been a big point of contention on this, and it's something we're trying to get clarified. So everybody's been calling this CFAP 3, but it's really not. What was passed in this year-end package and COVID relief pill needs to be thought about more like CFAP 1 Part 3, because it's very much intended to be an additional payment for those producers that missed that April 15th cutoff but still took significant losses. But the way they're doing it is by doing another inventory payment on that April 16th to May 14th window and using the class of cattle schedule from CFAP 1, Part 1, to calculate those payments. This is a new approach than what they've done in the previous two rounds. And the reason we don't want to call it CFAP 3 is there's money left in this program still. There's always the potential there could be an actual CFAP 3. So we don't want to kind of step on the nomenclature there, and we want to make sure we're real clear on what this is going to be and where it's directed. It's another $1.4 billion specifically for that window where producers kind of missed out on some of that money in the first round because of that arbitrary April 15th deadline.
Is this a step forward?
You know, it's a fix to some degree to an issue we've been talking about since April when this program first came out, and you know this as well as anybody, and so do your listeners. I mean, our producers were taking just as big a hit on April 16th as they were on April 14th. So to cut that program off in the middle like that was really detrimental to a lot of producers, particularly stockers and backgrounders and folks that were holding cattle to market them maybe when the market improved a little bit, not knowing what the conditions were going to be. So this helps with that. You know, if they participated in the other rounds, they've already received some money out of this program. This gets them more and gets them a little closer to kind of making up some of those losses. So yeah, it's a step forward in that regard for sure. And we're glad to see something targeted back at those folks that kind of got left out in those earlier rounds. But you know, it's one of those things where no one's going to get whole on this, but the hope is that it patches up some of the impact of the last year.
Okay. Okay. You mentioned the potential for additional funding, CFAP 3 style. What are the odds on that?
You know, great question. Here we are in the middle of a transition. Obviously, yeah. We're all awaiting results in Georgia today. There's going to be a massive turnover in leadership at these agencies in the next 6 weeks. And you know, this is one of dozens of issues that USDA is going to have to juggle as part of that transition. But we do know there are resources left. So our hope would be that USDA, either at the end of this administration or the beginning of the next, you know, follows through on that congressional intent and pushes those resources out into the country in the way they were intended to make sure they get to producers that are in need. And let's hopefully put this thing to bed and you know, get into a 2021 where we can get back to some kind of a normal at some point.
Okay. All right. Well, each new incoming administration comes with a unique set of challenges and opportunities, Ethan. Does the incoming Biden administration come with more opportunities or more challenges for cattlemen?
That's a great question. You know, I think that a lot of the messaging that we have heard out of the transition team, a lot of the conversations, the direct conversations that we've already had with them, I think they are looking forward to trying to work with cattle producers. They certainly have their objectives. They're going to be far more focused on things like climate change than the current administration is. But they've also made some comments about recognizing the important role that grazing plays in being a solution to climate change, which is music to our ears. That's a message we've been trying to get out for years. So that's positive. That shows that there's some room to work here and work through some of these issues. So we're looking forward to that. There are also, though, going to be some differences in perspective, you know, just sort of Democratic Party platform on land use and private land rights and things like that. And those are those age-old clashes that we've all been working on, you know, for some of us our entire lives. Those aren't going away, right? I mean, the mandate in this election was one of moderation, in my opinion, and yet what we're seeing on Capitol Hill, you know, this week and in the conversation nationally is sort of anything but, unfortunately. You know, my hope is still that we can get to a point where that's going to be the norm. It certainly would be more beneficial to getting some work done in Washington. But, you know, we're going to have to keep sort of taking people at face value and engaging in those conversations. And more importantly than anything else, probably educating and helping folks coming in this new administration to understand just what a benefit we can be, just how important we are economically to these rural communities that around the country and as well as some of these trade relationships and elsewhere. You know, it's not just about, you know, it's not just about cheeseburgers and McDonald's. It's a massive industry that has a tremendous impact and employs a lot of people. And we need to help them understand how we can fit into that equation. And I think they're open to having that conversation. We're certainly open to having it and have already gotten underway with that process.
Well, you've certainly got an incoming USDA secretary that's going to hit the ground running, no question about that. What about Michael Reagan over at EPA?
You know, it's interesting. A lot of the folks that have worked with him previously have been really outspoken about the fact that he's a guy who has been open to talking to the cattle industry, has been open to talking to agriculture. I think Ray Starling probably had the best quote on this that I heard, former chief of staff at USDA, He said, you know, he certainly has views that are perhaps left of center or left of mine, but he's a guy who's always open to having the conversation, and that's somebody we can work with. So,
wow.
You know, we're going to engage with that and start having those conversations and see where he wants to take EPA and some of those rulemakings that obviously, you know, have been so pivotal over the last 4 years and really the last 10.
Yep.
You know, certainly this administration will want to put their brand on that as well.
Great, so we'll
start
there.
That conversation with him.
Yeah, that's great perspective there, Ethan. Thanks for bringing that out, man. Hey, thanks so much for making time for us today. We'll be back in touch. We need to keep up with what's going on there. Thanks, Ethan.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, new highs in this bean market, 50-plus cent gains. What is going on?
Well, just explosive, Chip. You know, there's no real fundamental reason right now. I mean, on any given day, the attitudes are so bullish that they can find a reason if they want to. But there's nothing new, per se, today that we didn't know yesterday or the day before or, you know, so on and so forth. It's just money chasing the market at this point in time and explosive move to the upside in beans with it leading it. But, you know, everything's participating, basically. And it's broad-based across commodities. Aside from, you know, gold and I guess silver is back near unchanged now. But, you know, some of those markets pretty much broad-based across the commodity sector today. Big move up.
Yeah, $2 gains in the crude oil market. It's not bleeding over into the equities, though. Dow is mostly steady there. So, interesting. Big move in the cattle trade. And like you said, it's broad-based across the commodities. But this move in cattle today is pretty impressive.
Yeah, bounce back. Yesterday was just very disappointing. You know, we hit sell stops and the thing kind of got away from us to the downside. Today it's bouncing back and really, really strong bounce back there. So, you know, that's encouraging from that standpoint. Came into the week thinking that maybe we'd get higher cash cattle trade. Then yesterday that kind of squashed that. Well, now it's probably back in play again after today's price action.
Yeah. You know, back over to the grains real quick. The strength in the product market's got to be helping what's going on there. That bean oil market, good grief, 160, 170 points higher there. That's really impressive. Brian, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory, got Davis Michelson with me, and it's time to talk some politics and some policy. We've got Pro Farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer joining us. Jim, as always, thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Sure. I just want to say I'm going to continue calling them CFAP 3 payments, by the way, because they're very prescriptive, and it took Congress and USDA three times to get CFAP 1 and 2 correct.
Right, right. But the point that Ethan made on the difference on what the provision is to go back and to make up for some of the shortfalls in that CFAP 1 payment, though, right?
Yes, you could call it a supplemental, but, you know, it's the third check to some producers. So, yeah, you know, in the newsletter business, we like to simplify things.
Right, right. Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And the other thing that we didn't talk about with Ethan, and I don't know if it was all that important to do that in a conversation about the cattle trade, but that food box program, my goodness, Jim, they continue to pump. They must have discovered something in there that they really like because they continue to pump billions of dollars into it.
Yeah, $1.5 billion USDA announced yesterday, and that got into the dairy market and cattle market to some degree today, Chip. So we did have some new news today.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, real quick on this one, the WIP Plus roundtable that is happening. What is that? What's going on?
It's really for selected media people. I know Bill Northey is going to be on the call. Uh-huh. sometime today. And I think it's really a CYA bit, Chip, because USDA Washington has not been very good about the implementation and conversing to the county and state FSA offices. I know I got an email from several state people in FSA that didn't even know that they got the additional funding of $1.5 billion to pay the other 50% for 2019 disasters, Chip. So I think, USDA has finally heard the calls that we've been getting at ProFarmer from, farmers and FSA county people saying, where's the information?
Right, right. Yeah, the communication on this has been very questionable. But I go back a year talking with some USDA reps about how they were going to quantify the quality loss and figure some sort of a payment on quality. WIP was no easy program to figure out how to make a payment on.
One of the hardest I've seen in my career, yeah. Chip. And on ProFarmer.com, we link to a document that USDA just posted this morning for public inspection at the Federal Register, and go through that and it'll give you a headache, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Yep, no doubt about it. No doubt. Okay, the House is going to vote this week on a rules package for the 117th Congress.
They actually passed it, 217 to 206 on a partisan line vote, and it was a major one because this is like the nuclear option on the House Democrat side. Yep. It got rid of a lot of protections, Chip.
Okay, let's go through some of them. The motion to recommit.
The motion to recommit actually takes a lot of power away from the minority. And this is why, Republicans and I say accurately complained about it. And I think this is going to come home to roost if the Democrats lose control of the House, as most of these so-called experts predict after 2022 elections.
Lose control of the House.
House, yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
yes,
it just allows the minority party to actually do some, before a legislation is voted on, they can, file additional information, amendments, Chip, et cetera. It just took the hands, took their hands out of legislation.
Well, it sent bills back to committee to gather additional information and evidence on why it should be passed or not passed, right?
Yes, but again, this is a power play. This tells me Nancy Pelosi, as the Speaker of the House, this is her last time. She says she's leaving after this Congress. This was a deal she made with her far left people to get their votes, Chip. Not only this, but the biggest thing that I think will eventually get into the bond market, they have thrown any spending caution to the wind, by making no pay-go, right. pay-as-you-go provisions apply to health care and to climate change. So this is Pelosi making a deal, to get votes to continue a speakership.
Okay, that's another one of the big changes that I wanted to get to, the pay-go. Yes, it is an effort to deal with some of the expenses tied to the COVID-19 pandemic. But you nailed it, Jim. The environmental, the climate change battle, the Green New Deal. The eliminating PAYGO brings the Green New Deal into play.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
This gives them carte blanche. And also in budget rules, this puts no limit on discretionary or mandatory spending. So they're opening the vault. I don't see any other way to say this. Now, not this year, probably, maybe not even next year, but I'll tell you, these bond traders are eventually going to see this town, both Democrats and Republicans and the White House, both administrations, have just uncorked spending like you wouldn't believe.
Jim, and I know that you delve into the market outlook side of things from time to time, and I know you have opinions on interest rates. We're going to see a negative interest rate environment.
Oh, gosh. We better not. But
it's coming.
Well, if Dr. Vince Belanga, who you really know well too, if he says so, then I'd say they're coming. But boy,
I need to get him back on.
Yeah, I would say if Dr. Vince says that, then I'll go along with it.
We got to, yeah, it's something that we need to watch for. Goodness gracious. Okay, another one of the rule changes, the proxy voting. I understand why it was put in place under the pandemic. Did they maintain the proxy voting because of pandemic?
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons they did it in the last Congress, and they're just continuing it, which I don't think it's all that bad. Plus, they want also a report to, you know, saying what's the security for, say, lawmakers to vote from their homes. So I think that reflects the new world we're in, Chip. So I'm not too negative on that one.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to worry about that one too much either. I am worried that this House elected Pelosi the speaker again.
Well, she has shown now her, with her last 2 years, she's going to go on legislative history of her. So, I mean, she'll throw a couple of her members under the bus, Chip, in order to get significant legislation through. Trust me, right. She will. She's done it before. She'll do it again because this is her last 2 years. So she's going to go for the gusto. And I'm trying to be as bipartisan as possible, but they've uncorked most of the rules here. And I just think it will come back to haunt them, much like in the Senate. If the Democrats ever did away with the filibuster, they will rue the day they did that when the Republicans control it again, if they do lose this after today's votes in Georgia.
Well, the Democrats in the House have proven to be very effective communicators of the narrative that they want the American people to hear. So they'll spin it that it's somehow, some way the Republicans' fault if they do lose control of the House in 2 years. That's what they've done.
Yeah, well, odds, just looking at the numbers, Chip, if the Republicans do not regain control of the House after 2022 elections, they're not doing their work right, because the numbers clearly signal they should. So I think that's why Democrats are going to get what they can get.
Okay, I was too optimistic on the topics that we could get covered here, but real quick, I'm going to go to this one. The U.S. Congress will formally count votes from the Electoral College tomorrow. There's going to be some challenges to the process, right?
Oh, yeah. There's numerous House Republicans have said they'll object to the official electoral results from six states, won by Biden, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And there'll be at least one representative and one senator object to a state's result, and then they'll debate it for 2 hours. You know, the traditional view is that Vice President Pence, as the presiding officer, has a mostly ministerial role in the proceedings, but nothing's, normal anymore, but he'll be in an awkward position. Bottom line, we got to go through a couple of meanderings here, but Joe Biden will be the next president.
Right. And who's going to have control of the Senate?
You know, I think Larry Sabato had the best advice, that watch the total votes in Georgia, total for all, you know, both of them. If they go north of 4 million, up the odds that the Republicans will continue control of the Senate. If they go much under 4, that means that the Democrats will likely gain control. At least he did some analysis, because too many of these so-called experts watching elections have said toss-up. Somebody's got to win these races, Chip, and I think they've copped out on us when we needed them.
Who's going to rate? Will the Republicans win at least one of the races?
I think that they will, if not both. That's me. I'll go. I won't go 50-50 like these nervous Nellies.
Right. Hey, in the next segment, I'm going to talk about one of your favorite topics. If you want to stick around, you're more than welcome. If you don't have time, that's fine. I understand completely. But the need for some campaign spending reform. I'm going to touch on that next.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk Call us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Crazy, but that's how it goes.
How appropriate.
Millions of people living just close.
All right, welcome back. I'm Chip. Got Davis with me. Great conversation with Wiesmeyer.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes. I've known that man for almost 35 years now and worked with him for all of those years. And I value his opinion and his thoughts and his perspectives more today than I ever have. He's just outstanding, outstanding work. So, okay. I said that I was going to talk about some campaign finance reform, spending reform.
I'm interested to hear what you got going on this.
Well,
what's bouncing around in there, big fella? What do you got?
Well, you know, you got Bloomberg throwing $400 million down to Florida earlier this year. It really didn't help that much, or at least his cause that much. And, Davis, here in Iowa, we like to complain about the year leading up to the caucuses, the first in the country caucuses.
Yes, we do.
Which, by the way, do you remember which Democrat won the Iowa caucus this year? Last year?
No idea. No idea.
You don't?
Nope. Who was it?
Well, he's about to be our Secretary of Transportation, Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Mayor Pete won Iowa?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So for all of you out there that are, you know, that I've got mixed feelings on this. And part of the reason that I've got mixed feelings on all of this is because of the relentlessness of the campaign spending and ads that happen in the year leading up to those, to the caucus.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Unbearable.
And then we get a short respite after the caucus before the spending on the congressional races ramps up and the spending on the presidential race ramps up later. Once all of that kicks in, then by the time everything is said and done, we go through like 18 months of it in Iowa. And it's just. And what good did it do Buttigieg? I'm not sure. But the $400 million that Bloomberg spent in Florida, the outside money that is pouring into Georgia in support of the Democrat candidates is it's disturbing to me, but at the same time, I'm not going to go to former Mayor Bloomberg and say, listen, you shouldn't be able to do that. I mean, if the guy wants to spend that amount of money to get a message out that he wants out, if I stand in front of him and stop him from doing that, then somebody can stand in front of me and stop me from doing it in the future. And I don't want any part of that.
Right. Sure.
I don't want any part of that.
Right.
But I do wonder if, when we're talking about an election of somebody that will represent the state's interests first and foremost, as in a Senate election, if there shouldn't be some sort of limits on how much money from outside of that state could be spent on those campaigns.
From outside the state.
From outside of the state. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. From outside of the state. And again, this is a very touchy issue for me. It really is, because it First Amendment first and foremost. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the amount of money from outside of the state of Georgia that is poured into Georgia to support the Democrat candidates, and then you look over at two of the biggest contributors to the Republican candidates in that state, being Delta Airlines and Home Depot, two of the biggest, if not the biggest. You've also got Coca-Cola down in Atlanta. But two of the, let's call it two of the biggest businesses that headquarter in the state of Georgia, contributing to the Republicans and leading contributors to the Republican candidates, you got to wonder if the state is going to end up with representatives that have the state's interests in mind first, or if it is going to be more of a partisan representation. Mm-hmm. It's very concerning, very concerning. And the overlord is trying to send me
messages
they're too much for me to take in and decipher exactly what he is saying. Let's see, Democrat, what do we got here? Democrat, can you see it there, Davis? Democrat donors from California have given $26.3 million to Georgia Senate races. Republican donors in California have given $6.8 million. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's according to Bloomberg. Bloomberg News, in this case, I would assume. So
yeah, the other Bloomberg.
Right. Yeah, the other. Well, actually not. Yes. And the overlord says yes. So it is something that I'm not going to say that I've got all the answers from, but I will say this. Campaign spending should get more attention than it has had to this point. We need to spend some time figuring out what is the right way to fund these campaigns, not just in Georgia, not just in Iowa, across the country. Timeline on tonight, guys. Don't expect results tonight out of Georgia on both races. We might get the results on one of the races. I wouldn't expect it on both races. Trifecta, I want to talk about this on Friday at the latest, but if the trifecta is pulled off, could it further split the Democrat Party? That's one of the things I want to talk about. Okay? We've got Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing this afternoon right here on AgriTalk.